listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, great to be here with you tonight. I'm really excited. I started with this picture of outer space. That's a black hole. And you know, the first time I saw this picture, I thought that was a message in a bottle. And it really isn't. When I blew it up, it's a person that looks like a youngster sitting there in awe and wonder, staring at possibilities. We are here in this hour and going to be with you every week to talk about how to create your ultimate life. Today, I'm grateful to have a guest who is creating all kinds of powerful results in the world, and excited to have him here with me. I'd like to bring Sean Miller into the program. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Ah, Kellen. Thank you, sir. It's an honor.
Well, Sean and I have known each other for a few minutes, and when I say something like, there's a little kid sitting there staring into the black hole, thinking about the possibilities of life, and more especially a powerful life, a good life, an ultimate life. What do you think about that?
Oh, gosh. That's, we were talking earlier about thinking. And I think, you know, one of the things I wish they taught in school is about thinking, right? And how you create with your mind, and how impactful your thoughts are, and what your thoughts are, what in fact your thoughts are, right? And so when I think about that in the context of thinking about thinking, I say the word think again, but I think about a little kid. I imagine if we taught them, you know, what their thoughts are, and you know, how meditation, and you know, how to control their thoughts and create with their thoughts.
Why don't we go down that road for a minute? You say, teach them what thoughts are.
Yeah.
And we're creating with thinking. And, you know, there's a book, Think and Grow Rich, and it's been published, I don't know, 100 years or 80 years or something. And
100, yeah.
And a new version and another new version and all that kind of stuff. And it's all about thinking. Think and grow rich. So if teaching about thinking is so important in terms of creating an ultimate life, and I want to give a little definition here. Mm. I define your ultimate life as a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy that you create by using and serving with your divine gifts. And I realize other people may have a little definition, and Sean will talk about yours in a minute. But let's get right to what you just said. What are thoughts?
Wow. Well, that's complicated. And probably you're smart enough to understand better than me what thoughts are actually are. But all I can say is that thoughts aren't what I thought they were for most of my life. And honestly, I thought that the thoughts rattling around in my head were the sometimes you talk about the one who's inside seeing your experience, right? Your real soul, right? And I didn't understand that there was a difference between the thoughts rattling around in my head and my soul, like my being, right? And most of those thoughts rattling around in my head, some of them are useless. You know, much of them are song lyrics, to be frank, but a lot of them are like bad, like really harmful, you know, detrimental, you know, thoughts of you know, the diminishing what I'm capable of. And in some cases in my life, frankly, as an adult, you know, giving me like really bad ideas, like I should pull my car out in front of a gas truck or some shenanigans. And it's just these really, really goofy thoughts that really honestly have nothing to do with me. They're just this electrochemical, right? You could probably explain what's going on, but until I understood that wasn't actually me, right? That wasn't my heart and soul. They were just these thoughts. That was really, really, really life-changing thing.
So in the last few years, we'll go back and come to thoughts in a minute, but I want, first of all, people to understand why you are here on a show talking about creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Because if you have a situation, we're not too many years ago, you were having negative thoughts, negative self-talk. You believed all your thoughts. You believed that they actually defined who you were, instead of understanding that they're just some crap that's happening over here and you are somebody else. What has that changed? Understanding what they really are and that you can basically ignore them, most of them, all the time. What has that change allowed you to do in terms of creating your own life that you love every day, where you feel like you have a purpose, you're excited, and you have something to, like, you're doing something. What's happened in that regard?
Well, from that place to a new place, to from thinking that those thoughts are your soul speaking to you, terrible things, to thinking that, to understanding what they are and being able to define, what I'm thinking about, and choosing what I'm thinking about, it changes everything, right? It's really difficult to be happy when you're mired with those things. It's difficult to focus and get things done when you're mired in those things. It's difficult to reflect. It's difficult to receive. It's a lot of people struggle even to receive. I have struggled even to receive a simple compliment, right? It's so mired in negative thoughts about that you can't even receive a simple compliment. So those things are so impactful in enjoying your life that it's hard to even, it's as big as that thing behind you, right? I can't even put a finger on it.
So let's introduce the visitors to who you are. What do you do? Who are you and what you do? And what is that life that you have? Like, I love your background. I see a football jersey, I think, and, bottles of spirits that you have some connection to, and more than the actual activities. I mean, you're free to talk about those too, but I want to understand your own personal enjoyment. Like, what's happened to move you from a place of thinking those things and being governed by trash talk, inside trash talk, to a place where you enjoy your life now and you love it? And what happened? What do you do?
Well, I always start, I'm married. I'm a husband. I'm married for a long, long time, 26 years now.
That's a heroic achievement by itself. So everybody that's listening to this right now, round of applause, because in these days, someone joyfully and happily, and I've met his wife, joyfully and happily married for 26 years, that is a heroic flipping accomplishment.
Well, Amy makes it seem easy, but it's really, truly a joy, and it's a big, big part of who I am and what I do, and I'm so happy that, we live together, and we work together, and we travel together, and we're so fortunate that we have this odd thing. If we start to grumble a little bit at one another, the solution to grumbling at one another is to spend time together. It's like we start to bicker a little bit. Let's go for a walk. Right. So it's an odd thing that we have, but being together refreshes us together. I live in Holland, Michigan. It's a little tourist town across the water from Chicago. It's a beautiful little place, but my family home is Nebraska, and I hang on to Cornhusker football. So that whole wall back there is decorated with Cornhusker gear. And that's a Eric Crouch Heisman jersey that you see. And then all of these bottles are mostly friends. Honestly, they're places and people and friends. We got into the tequila business here a while ago, and it's been a great, great business for me and for another even longer than Amy relationship. My friend Jeff, that's my business partner. We've been friends since eighth grade, and he and I started this business together, and it's just been a remarkable thing. And we just couldn't be happier working with the families that we represent. We represent, Kellen, family owned brands of tequila from Mexico and mezcal from Mexico. And so they're the producers' own family brands. And we bring the product to the United States, and we tell their story for them. And it's just a very unique and interesting thing that I really, really enjoy.
So in listening to you describe it, There's a sense of fun, a sense of pride, a sense of excitement at telling those stories, at knowing those people. And I know that you love going there and driving down dirt roads for hours to find some tiny little place that wherever, whatever. Yeah. I want you to tell a little bit of the stories, because we're talking about the ultimate life. So your life is traveling to Mexico, driving down dusty roads, meeting people that are in these tiny family-owned businesses, some of them with little tiny stills that will never turn into anything, and others that have created big stuff, and they're this family thing, and you're a 26-year veteran of a successful marriage. Tell me about these relationships that you're creating with these people.
They're so gracious, and they're so kind, and I'm not even a big drinker, to be honest. I think their products are fascinating and delicious, and I enjoy the craftsmanship of it. And Amy and I got started exploring. You know, we go to a rural area of Mexico for business. I refer to it as the Iowa part of Mexico. When people say, "Well, you go to Mexico," they think I go to Cancun or Cabo or something. And I'm like, no, I go to like Iowa. I go to the center of Mexico. It's an agricultural area. There's John Deere dealerships. I mean, it's like Iowa. And they're simple people. They dress like cowboys. But they do, you know, there's real business in agriculture, and then an agricultural product, which is all that, you know, liquor is, frankly. It comes from a grain, or in Mexico, an agave, and they produce these wonderful spirits, and these are multi-generational businesses, right? But what we've been able to do is to take that story of that craftsmanship in a fourth or fifth or sixth generation family business, and respectfully tell their story in a way that is compelling to a U.S. consumer, but is, you know, but they wouldn't do it, right? We never tell our own story very well, right? Somebody else can usually tell our story better than we can. They're humble to that. They don't tell their story very well, and they don't necessarily know how to communicate on, you know, to an American audience, American consumer. So we bridge that gap for them, and there's some, you know, functional logistical things involved, of course, with bringing the products in here and all that stuff. But mostly it's about creating story and creating a brand and producing something people want to buy. And we've just had so much fun, meeting these people, and it's been such an honor. Callan, I can't tell you, a little while ago, one of the men that we've worked with for a long time, he introduced us to his nephew that was getting into the business for the first time. And he said to me, "And you will import the product for him." There was no discussion. I didn't have to present to him, how could I, he said, you will bring the product to the United States. Yes, sir.
So I want to, I love this, and it's clear that you have fallen in love with these people, with their stories and everything else, and that you love doing this. So that is a joyful part of your life. True, not true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I've listened to many, many stories that you've told, and we talk often about your trips there and everything else. Now, what I want to do is go back and tie these first two parts together.
Yeah.
How has your understanding, learning that thoughts are just chemicals in our head, we don't have to live them, they don't mean anything, particularly unless we choose to own them and act on them and everything else, but before that, they're nothing. How is that discovery and you learning to do things like meditate and direct your thinking and all this stuff that we talk about that's kind of sometimes woo-woo, how has that contributed to you being able to create a successful boots-on-the-ground import-export business that creates cash and furthers, you know, your life ambitions? And we'll talk more about family later. How did that – why are they even related?
Well, they're completely connected, right? Because if I can't if my thinking isn't clear, if my focus isn't clear, if I'm mired in negative thoughts or I'm mired in distracting thoughts, I can't do these things well. I can't learn another language. I can't learn to navigate in another culture. I mean, if I think poorly of myself and I can't think clearly, right, and accurately, I couldn't drive in Guadalajara, right? I couldn't, and not to mention, you know, handle actual business negotiations and conversations and these sorts of things, right? In crossing cultures and crossing languages I couldn't possibly do this unless I were able to, you know, understand the thinking, control the thinking, recognize when I get off course, put myself back on course, this is a big thing, right? This is a whole other topic. But once you understand, once I understood, I guess probably everybody, once I understood what the thoughts were and that I could control them, then I learned that I could choose to enjoy myself. I could choose to enjoy what I'm doing right now. I could choose to be present with the person I'm with, this kind of thing. And I think that makes a big, big impression on people. It makes a huge impression in how we interact with one another and whether or not the person I'm interacting with enjoys that and sees value in it and wants to spend time with me, right? And in the future and introduce me to their family and these types of, all of these things, they're clearly in my mind connected. And it's very, very special and very powerful.
So you're telling me that your ability to learn what thoughts are, to direct your thinking, to get out of negative self-talk, to control and address the dialogue in your mind, the self-doubt, the worry, all this gobbledygook that we often dismiss as mumbo-jumbo, you're saying that your ability to do that has helped you make better friends, helped you help people like you, close business, make deals, create a good impression on people, and do stuff that there's no way you otherwise would have done.
No way. And I said it a minute ago, to be frank, I might have like pulled my car in front of a train or something at one point. Like it was bad. Like it was really, really, really bad. Right. And I was really, really, really bad. And I'm not. Right. And I'm not stupid. And I'm not, you know, invaluable. But yet those thoughts were really, really real, right? So, and the odd thing is that those things are as big and scary as those thoughts are, or that story is, controlling them and changing them is not complicated. Really, it's really quite simple. And it's just a matter of learning and then creating the habits and being and then the awareness to be able to do it all the time. And so now I'm starting, you know, you use the word joy, and the word joy to me, honestly, was like, I used to kind of eye roll to the word, I'm like, joy. I mean, what are you talking about? Right. But now I can see, If I can go from here to here and go from here to here and go from here to here, I can continue to turn up the dial, right? And it's not really magic. It takes a while. These are long rooted habits, right? But I can turn up the dial. I can actually enjoy food a little more. I can enjoy my wife a little more. I can enjoy going to the freaking grocery store a little more, right? And it's a choice and a choice and a choice and a choice. And you're just kind of turning that up all the time.
So you said something there that I want to, that'll pull us a little bit in a different direction, but it's okay. I'm doing it on purpose. You said it's not complicated and it takes some practice. And you coined a term several years ago called rigorous simplicity. And that wasn't in connection with this. It was in connection with another business that you had run for a long time that wasn't profitable for you. It was a big struggle bus and the whole nine yards. But that was where you coined it. And before we go there, I want to just add one little piece of information that I know about you. In your effort to both be present to, be fully there with people, you have now spent 1,300 and something, you can need to correct me because I know my number's wrong, a boatload of days in a row learning Spanish with some app on the phone. How many days is that?
I'm just like 1,348, I think. Just shy of 1,350.
Okay, so that's almost, we're going on 4 years here because, you know, 365 times three is 730, 1080. So you're coming up on 4 years every single day spending, I don't know, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is on your app learning Spanish.
Yeah.
Because you decided, you made a choice to dump the thinking that it's not important or people don't matter, they won't like you, and to learn that language, to cross the culture, to cross the thing, so you could facilitate business there because of that. And that action, 1,348 days in a row, is also like learning to meditate, like learning to direct your thinking, is an action of rigorous simplicity. So where did that come? Where did rigorous simplicity come from? And how did you get that phrase?
Well, I'm just about to say, unless anybody thinks I'm like super smart or something, it's taking me, that's 1,340 days to be mediocrely competent in Spanish, right? But the rigorous simplicity comes from the gym. So I was always an athlete. My wife is always an athlete. And we made the decision a while ago to leave a corporate job and to, in a friend of mine had purchased a business, and I didn't know you could purchase a business. Frankly, I knew you could start a business, but I didn't know you could just buy one. And a friend of mine had left a corporate job and had acquired a business. It was going really well for him. And so I decided, well, I could do that too. So I saved up some nickels and I managed to negotiate some help from my dad. And we together bought this fitness gym, right? And so we've been running this gym for now 18 years. And now we have son-in-laws involved even in that thing. But in the gym, rigorous simplicity means that the things that work well in the gym, they're not complicated. And in fact, when what you see is you see people come into the gym and they have a lot of they scale up really, really fast. They have a lot of results really, really fast. And then it like plateaus or even declines because they come in doing really simple stuff. They come in, they do squats, they do deadlifts, they do bench press, they do, you know, and they do it simply and intensely and they're done. They spend like a year doing that. And I don't know if they get bored or they read too many magazines or what, but the next thing you know, they're worried about like the turning the peak of the bicep curl instead of just doing a freaking deadlift, and their performance starts to drop. So they've got, it's got to be simple, but you can't just show up once, or you can't just show up now and then. Like you can't, you know, it's not a good idea to like deadlift once every 6 months. Probably that wouldn't work real well, right? You'd be really sore, probably hurt yourself. So if you're going to come to the gym, you got to come on a rigorousness, but you really want to keep what you're doing there pretty simple, keep the intensity high. So rigorous simplicity was something that we coined that, frankly, it has a lot of applications beyond the gym.
It was. And, you know, one, it came from one day when we were talking about the gym and about your project there. And this is long before you got in the business you're in now. And I asked, well, what does it take to be successful there? And you said, well, these guys, and it's not like a 24-hour fitness. It's like a serious bodybuilding gym where people come and prepare for competitions and stuff so that the listeners know. But so you did this. And I ask you, well, what does it take to be there, successful there? Because we were looking for ways to correlate those activities with you in terms of the changes that you now have successfully made. And you said, well, they don't do much. They come in, they eat, they lift, and they sleep. And I said, oh, well, that sounds pretty simple. And then somewhere in the back and forth, that term came out. It's rigorous, it's hard, but it's simple. So as you think about your Spanish, as you think about your mind work, as you think about moving from a person who was quite unhappy with themselves, who was not very, didn't believe they were very valuable, to someone who's now creating generational wealth, which we'll talk about later, who's happy with their life, who's having a wildly good relationship with their wife, well, how does rigorous simplicity, which means religiously or rigorously doing simple things, how does that play into this grand coolness that you're creating?
Yeah. I should get a t-shirt that says grand coolness. It's just that, right? To me, I guess I'm familiar with that term, but it's just that. It's just, you know, you make a commitment, you keep the commitment, you know, you do the things. You know, you decide you want to learn Spanish. You download the app. You decide you're gonna, you know, do it, and you do it, and you keep doing it, and then you keep doing it, right? And some days you don't want to, but you do it anyway. And some days it's really fun, and it feels really fruitful, and that's great, right? But you keep, just no matter what, you just keep doing the things that you know, right, are gonna work. And that's one of the funny things, you know, you mentioned Think and Grow Rich, right? There's certain principles of business, there's certain principles of communication, there's certain things that, you know, and a lot of the things, frankly, that are in Think and Grow Rich are also in the Bible and other, these are just human concepts, right? But some people do them, and some people do them rigorously, right? And some people don't do them at all, and some people just don't do them with any rigorousness, any consistency, and so they don't have the kind of success that other people do, right? And everybody's got, people have different opportunities, and people have different gifts and talents, and they, you know, not everybody's equal, you know, for sure, but most everybody has the opportunity to make something of themselves if they want to, and they just need to do that. Right.
Yes. And so I want to ask you, rigorous simplicity. I had a question that popped through my mind, and I want to find. Oh, it's this. So you mentioned something that I find as a coach. And so for the listeners that may not know this already, I'm a coach. I have clients all over the world, and I've been coaching for, I don't know, 11, 12 years or something. Before that, I had a corporate job like Sean did, and like maybe a lot of people do. And I spent 30 years doing that, and it was ultimately unsatisfying, so I decided to become a coach. One of the things that people struggle with in their effort to change, because something about their life's not happy. They don't have enough money, their relationship sucks, they hate themselves, their health is bad, whatever it is. And they're not having any luck doing it on their own. So they look for help. If you want to go to the Olympics, you get a coach. If you want to change some significant things about your life, you get a coach. And you find one that really works for you. So one of the things I hear all the time is, I got started and I quit. I got started and I got bored. I got started and I got frustrated. It didn't work for me. And we've entered this phase in the world where everybody thinks that truth is relative and didn't work for me is the ultimate excuse. And so I want you to talk for a minute about what you just sort of said. It's absolute truth, and you glossed over it quickly. What is this stuff about do it whether you feel like it or not? There's two parts of this. Let's do that first. Do it whether you feel like it or not. Where does that come from, and how do you do that?
You choose. There's no better answer than that. You choose, right? You decide you're going to do it, and you're going to do it anyway. Right? Because there's always a thing. So you're going to do it, and you're going to do it anyway. And what, you know, one of the things we hear all the time, and I'm sure you hear it as you're coaching people, but we hear it in the fitness business all the time, is I was doing this thing and it was going really well, and then I stopped. And then I tried this other thing for a while, and that was going really well too, but then I stopped. And there's this funny phrase, well, stop stopping.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's just, and when that ties to rigorous simplicity, right? It's just not that freaking complicated. So just stop stopping. And you might make some progress, right? But it's just a matter of choosing, and you just have to choose.
So in it's easy for someone to see going to the gym, if you go every single day and you do the same things you're supposed to do, or follow your trainer or follow the program or whatever, if you do that, it's easy to see you're going to get results and you're going to get better. I have taught piano since I was 17. I'm 67. So I taught piano for 50 years on and off. I don't have any students right now, but I have, including at college and a lot of places. And you can, it's easy to see that if you practice every day, you're going to get better, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to learn things and everything else. When you go to this intangible stuff, like understanding your thinking or managing your moods or making choices inside of you, it's really difficult to measure milestones and progress in a way that is like, playing the piano, I can play this hard song I couldn't, or I can lift 10 pounds more now than I could last week, or I don't know what the right measurements are for weightlifting progress, so whatever that is. What would you say to somebody about those squishy things, about how to keep motivated when the things are squishy, and it's so much easier to say, well, not today?
Well, and I love scoreboards. I really, really do. I get it. And I really, really, really like scoreboards. But you know, that question, as in most things in life, there's no scoreboard and there's no clear beginning or end to most things in your life. And so I think it's about my enjoyment of that and my engagement in it, my enjoyment of it, right? Which is a perpetual level, as I said earlier, of choosing. So I have to be aware. I have to notice, right? I have to notice my thinking. I have to notice my pattern. I have to notice my bad thinking, notice my good thinking, notice where my energy, notice how I'm showing up for somebody, and then intentionally choose to do a little bit better, a little bit happier, a little bit more intense, a little bit faster, a little bit more fun. And I can do that. Right. I have to notice. I have to intentionally with consciousness. Right. I have to notice how I'm being and then notice what I'm choosing. And in that combination, I know that, you know, I might never play Park Carnegie Hall, but I know I can get a little faster. I can get a little happier. I can get a little bit more of what I want. Right.
You can, and here's you've identified something, and I want to say it a little bit different way for our folks and for you, because I'm going to ask you to comment on it, and that's this. Even though external measurements like weights you're lifting or piano pieces you're playing are measurable, and some other things are a little squishier to measure, foundationally, it starts with you deciding, I'm going to live my ultimate life. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to create a product. I'm going to lose this weight. I'm going to be able to bench press 100, 200, 500 pounds. I'm going to do that. And it foundationally starts with, I'm going to do that. And nobody has to agree. You don't need anyone's permission. That is a thing in you. I'm going to learn Spanish. I'm going to learn to meditate. I'm going to do, why? Because I said so. And you and I have talked about that phrase, because I said so. And to me, that is the master key of anything. Because if you look for motivation outside of you, in a book, in a seminar, in a friend, it will fail. There will come a day when you don't have the courage. And so it has to be because you said so. And now in the terms of combining, because I said so, the rigorous simplicity and execution of what you just described, I have to notice and I have to choose. But having the will and courage to do that is because you said, Sean Miller, am going to have more enjoyment in life. I'm going to stop this other kind of person I've been. I'm going to do that. Why? Because I said so. You know, ultimately, that was the genesis. So I want you to tie that sort of together in how it's evolved for you.
Well, it's, and the thing that comes to mind, I mean, the thing that we can't, I can't ignore, right? And I did seek a coach in this process, right? And I have been coached through this process, right? And so I have voluntarily put myself not only, you know, under my own personal development agenda, but I've invested quite a good amount and for a long, long time, to be honest, in a coach, right? That helps me with these things and holds me accountable to these things and, you know, asks great questions. And so, you know, there was a time probably in my relationship with you, Kellen, there was a time, you probably believed in me a lot more than I did, to be honest, right? But the reality is that a lot of that was just my terrible thinking, right? I wasn't, you know, 10 years ago, I wasn't, you know, markedly dumber. I wasn't I was pretty the same person. In fact, I was younger and had more energy probably than I do now, right? So I was probably more capable then than now. But my thinking was so bad. But I still had a lot of skills and a lot of big energy and a lot of things to me, right? Mm-hmm. And so anybody else that I had ever met who was in any kind of position of coaching me or that I had attempted to hire to coach me for anything, frankly, like since high school, I was always able to kind of intimidate and control them and kind of maintain the relationship in such a way that I was comfortable. Right? Now, Kellen was the first person that I had met that was interested in me in that way, but also had a personality and intensity that was so bright and focused and intense that I couldn't dominate the energy of the moment and extract myself from the situation and get back to my little comfort zone. And that's an extraordinary thing. I know a lot of people. I've met a lot of people, and I've tried to hire a lot of coaches for a lot of different things, frankly. And most of them, this is the situation. I'm literally able to out energy them for just enough time to get myself out of the pressure that they're trying to apply, so that I can go back into my little comfort zone, right? And I cannot energetically dominate Kellen so that I can do that. Now, a lot of times that's really wearing on me, frankly, and I don't always appreciate it in the moment, frankly. But it's true, right? So these things that we're talking about, these improvements that I'm making and these choices that I'm making and the things that I'm noticing and things I'm doing today, that's been, you know, intentionally coached for a long, long time, right? In a skillful way. So we can't talk about that journey and not be honest about that, right? And that's very, very important in my process. I would not have chosen the path that I'm on had I not had the right direction in the path.
Well, that's like somebody coming to your gym or one of the Mexican people you meet and your skill and ability at helping them understand how to get in the U.S. market and how to craft and tell their story and how to stay in the path of rigorous simplicity at the gym. And I want to upplay or upvote for a moment your own skill, because you have a 25-year marriage, 26, sorry, and I also know, and you mentioned this briefly, you have a couple of sons-in-law. Mm-hmm. You've raised a couple of magnificent daughters who are launched on their own. They're both married. Mm-hmm. You've brought the sons-in-law into business in some ways in the gym and in some ways in your importing business. And you're doing it in a skillful way that today looks like it easily could create some long-term benefits, some generational wealth, a business that you can pass on if you know, assuming they want to, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And that's all because you chose this uphill path. You said, I don't know how to do this, but I'm not staying where I am. I'm going up there. And I don't know how to get there, but I'm going. And you kept doing it. And now, I want you to talk a little bit about how you're involving the boys and the cool stuff that's really happening. You're creating your ultimate life.
Yeah.
And you're doing it. Thank you for the kudos and thank you for saying nice things.
Well, you're doing this. It's true. And I am. And it's funny because I think about how terrible my self-image was at one time. But I was still seeking help and willing to invest in help. So obviously I thought I had something, right? I thought I could be something. I didn't completely lose confidence in that I could be something, or I wouldn't have invested in myself, right? But we've reached a point now where my girls are grown up and they're married and they both have jobs that they really, really like. And one daughter is really into dogs and she's at a dog training place. And another daughter is a surgical technician and she just really, really likes that job. And I'm thrilled that they have jobs that they really, really like. And they both got married and gratefully they're married to guys that I like, which doesn't always happen. Right. So I don't know how that worked out, but they married to guys that I like and they're very different. Those two boys, they're very, very different personalities, but I like them both and they get along okay. And somehow I've created a life that, these new young men that are around me want to be a part of that. And that's
an accomplishment by itself. Sorry for interrupting. Yeah. But the fact that the generational thing that they want to be around their father-in-law means either they're mentally busted, I'm joking, of course, or you have really created something extraordinary. So keep going with that little caveat.
Yeah. So I'm not a big ego guy, but I recognize that that's true, right? And I'm very, very careful that there's a lot of issues with family business. A lot of people get into family business. They don't want to. They feel obligated to, right? They think it's necessary. You know, there's no option for them but to do that. And so I've been very, very cautious in that. They expressed some interest, and I just invite to come along, right? And I just been perpetually over the last 2 years inviting them to come along in different ways because they're very different kids. But they're both involved now in all the things, honestly, that are me, right? All the businesses that are an extension of me, they're involved in all of them, but within their own, sort of skill set and how it matches their personality. And my thought about that is that gives me an opportunity to, help take care of my daughters long term. It gives me an opportunity to kind of be involved with these boys' lives that are involved with my daughters in an intimate way. And I'm interested in them and how they're being. So it gives me an opportunity not to control them or anything, but maybe to coach them and be around them and maybe to learn about them and, in new ways. But it also gives me the opportunity to take, potentially these businesses that I've built, and instead of having to you know, just sell them or whatever at some point, whatever that is for me. I'm 51. I don't know. But at some point, instead of maybe selling them, maybe these boys can continue what I've been doing and maybe they'll pay me something for it, right? Long term. And I can go maybe do something else. I don't know. Maybe play more golf. So that's not a very sophisticated plan, but that's my grand plan.
And just listening to you describe it, it's clear that that provides you with joy. You're happy. You're smiling. There's authentic truth and joy coming from your eyes and your persona as you talk about that.
It's pretty cool. It's funny. They haven't, you know, they're still learning me. I must be a little bit more intimidating than I think I am. I know they tell my wife, every time I call one of them to a meeting, they tell my wife, they think they're going to get fired today. or they ask her if they're going to get fired today before they get here. But I think it's really fun, and I'm really, really grateful that they're interested in what I'm doing. And I'm grateful that I can have the opportunity to, you know, maybe teach them some things that I've learned and then have them go out and be successful. It's really fun. It's really very rewarding.
So you've done a fabulous job. We've just got a couple of minutes left, Sean, and I want you to think about what you would leave with our listeners, you know, in terms of creating the life of purpose, prosperity and joy, your own businesses, generational wealth, anything you want to say, invite them to consider or do, please roll.
Wow. That's a big one, man. I would just say that there's so much possibility. There's so much opportunity. And if you can, you know, learn to appreciate the thing, you can learn to appreciate the things that you have. You can learn to have enthusiasm about the opportunities that are in front of you. You can learn to understand that rigorous simplicity would actually, you know, work for you, right? And the things that you have and the way, and you can go about doing things that just seem interesting to you. And if you do them well, you might provide value and it might be fruitful for you, right? It might be money. It might be just be opportunity and experiences and things. There's so many things that I get to do that they're just so fun. I don't even care that I get paid for them. I happen to get paid for them, and that's cool too. But that's really not even the point. There's so much opportunity among people and places and things that you can do and the relationships you have and the experiences you're going to have. It's just very, very exciting. And I just would want to encourage people to be excited and to try things and to get help. And, you know, it's a good life, man. It's a good opportunity.
So I want to thank you, Sean, and I want to encourage everybody to listen to this and take Sean's advice apart. Your opportunity is infinite, even post-COVID, even with the political divisiveness in the U.S. and in other countries, even with war going on. There is an infinite amount of opportunity. There is no end. Rigorous simplicity will get you to any goal you want to get to. It can be monetary. It can be personal. Anything you want to have is possible. And there are no limits except the ones you allow to persist. Mm-hmm. There are no things you can't do. Sean, thank you for being on the show with us today on Your Ultimate Life.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's a real honor. I'm very, very grateful. Thank you.
You betcha. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Your Ultimate Life. You have every possibility to create anything you want. And if you want more information, you've seen the website on there all show long, yourultimatelife.ca, and it's .ca because I'm in Canada right now, although I'm dual national, but yourultimatelife.ca. And take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of you every minute of every day. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.